Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. I got my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. We got a couple of sexy docs who are joining us today. They're the Barbell Medicine Crew, our brothers from almost Mother
like
Mother.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, almost like our sister podcast friends or some.
I don't know.
Brother podcast?
Brother. Sure. We are said bro meatheads.
That's true. Jeez. Yeah, a lot of meat on this podcast.
There's a lot going on. All right. Today we're going to be talking about inappropriate testing. We actually talked about this a little bit before. We're going to talk about some of these specific companies who, we may consider predatory. I don't know if I can use their words. Maybe if I'm going to get sued for saying that, but I think it's a little bit predatory based on the marketing efforts. And we're going to talk all about it. In fact, Dr. Austin even went with one of these companies for free, mind you, didn't pay for it, to do some investigative journalism here to discuss. So welcome to the podcast, you sexy machines.
Hey, thanks for the intro, guys.
I was waiting for the air horn.
Has it been about, it's been 2 or 3 years since we did the first podcast with you guys on inappropriate batteries of testing, right?
Yeah, I think that one that we did before was prompted by an actual patient experience that I had where this patient pursued some of this testing and was kind of incidentally found to be iron deficient as a like middle-aged man, and then was just essentially told to take iron and let go, which is a potentially lethal course of management for patients who might have an ominous occult source of blood loss, as a common cause for that presentation.
I remember that story, yeah. For some background, these direct-to-consumer lab testing companies have been around for quite a long time. I remember getting associated with one in residency called Wellness Effects. That's not around anymore. Because I was like, oh, cool. I could kind of order labs. That was like whatever it was, 10, 15 years ago. So this concept isn't new, but it's recirculating and recycling, or whatever you want to call it, and with a lot of marketing involved, including big time influencers like our buddy Mark Hyman, who is part of this company called Function, but there's a few other ones. There's Merrick Health, there's one called Superpower that's out, and they all have they're all the same. They're exactly the same. Large batteries of tests for relatively decent prices compared to what insurance would pay for, and just huge amounts of marketing behind them.
Yeah, this market is actually crazy big. I mean, we did a podcast on this as well, like direct to consumer labs, and we can get into the whys and the pitfalls and maybe educate some folks ideally. But this market has grown 20-fold between 2010 and 2020, and it's expected to be over $6.3 billion by 2032. So there's like a lot of money exchanging hands here. But to your point, it's not like proprietary stuff. Like one of these companies has like, these specific lab analytes put together, it's going to unlock your sort of health trajectory. It's the same labs you could get from Quest or from any other lab provider. It's just these companies are trying to take the friction out of it, whether it's hey, it's getting in front of your face and saying, look, we can ship it to your door, or we could have somebody come to your house or whatever, or otherwise just bypassing, go to see your physician. And so, I don't know, maybe we can start. And I don't want to dictate this podcast. It's your podcast, but
I know. I kind of like Dr. Jordan taking charge.
I'm the host of our own podcast, so I got to do this.
No. Talk about Function. Let's just talk about it.
Function Health, because we've talked about Mark Hyman at nauseam, and we cannot stand how they, what they do is they try to create an us versus them and say, oh, your traditional doctor doesn't order all the tests. Because, as we know, traditional doctors should do an appropriate evaluation, only test as appropriately for screening and if clinically suspected for disease. So, what the hell's up with Function Health?
Let's hear it.
Yeah, well, I think maybe one, we can find some common ground, not with Function necessarily, but with the people who pursue that avenue. It's like maybe they go into their physician, their primary care physician, which maybe took more effort than it should, right? They, oh, look, I had to wait a few months to go see my primary care physician. So that's like strike one. And then, you know, the end of the visit, which was kind of rushed, maybe they felt like they weren't heard. They were interrupted a bunch, the 7.5 minutes on average. And they were like, hey, I've been curious, like, what is my testosterone level? Like, can we just check my testosterone level? And you know, there we could have a whole separate podcast about the appropriateness of that and working that up. But the doctor this is at the end of the visit, and they're like, you're too young or you're fine or whatever. And it brushes off the patient. And so that experience is negative, obviously, for the patient. And so it's kind of understandable on some level where someone would pursue this or at least be interested or open to it. So I don't, it's not that it's appropriate testing, like we'll for sure get into that. But I guess I understand where a person would be like, look, strike one was it took me a while to get in my primary care doctor. Strike two, they felt like they brushed me off. And then strike three, I didn't get the test that I wanted and I can get it. So like, why wouldn't I do that? And so maybe let's start there. Do you feel like that?
So what's
like
the root issue?
Yeah, like. Ideal, would you have more time with your primary care physician and you know, better communication strategies? Would it be just testing, you know, placating the patient? Or, you know, again, would more time to discuss these things? But I also think just communication strategies are generally poor. like it would take a while to communicate to that individual, hey, look, do you have these symptoms? Are you having these experiences? I hear you. It's definitely concerning. And then, you know, that just takes more time. And so you got to see, 20, 30 patients a day? And
no, but that, okay. So then that's, okay, this is my soapbox now. So this gets me to the dysfunction of our system and probably why I'm a broke martyr, because as an endocrinologist, you know, I get referred people with those complaints. So they go and they see their primary care physician for 15 minutes because the systems are forcing them to just crank through, like you just said, 20 to 30 patients a day. So they don't have time to actually take care of them and talk to people. So what do they do? I don't have time. Go see the endocrinologist. So then I sit there and I spend 45 minutes with them for a new patient, barely get paid anything, but we actually figure it out. And if they don't need testosterone evaluation screening, I actually get to talk to them about it. So my issue is with our healthcare system, the insurance system, and everything like that. And like Spencer will say, well, then everyone should just pay for direct care models like what these places do, I guess, or what he's doing.
Oh, by the way, it took him another 2 months to see you to get the referral to endocrinology. So in the interim, they've been spammed with Function, Merrick, whoever else. And they're like, I don't need to go see this other doctor. I can see... get these tests and then I'll know what to do. It'll be easy.
I think it's a fair argument
though. they do that. Then they get inappropriately started on medicine and hormone therapy. And then I don't know if they have real disease. It's just fake. And they just got medicine because that's what they got sold. And now I have to redo a whole evaluation and they're all screwed. And a lot of them end up on medicine that they don't need.
Because they tested it in the afternoon, not fasting. What were you going to say, Austin? What are you going to say, Dr. Austin?
Yeah, I think it's a fair argument. I think that having more time and to communicate is something that I know to some extent you as well, Spencer, are able to take advantage of in the telemedicine space where we operate, where I've had plenty of patients who want to have conversations about testing. And with a fair amount of time and back and forth and conversation, I'm able either to educate them to the point where they understand that maybe it's not necessary, or at least if I feel like this test is not necessarily going to be like overtly harmful to pursue, we at least have the appropriate caveats around like, what are we potentially expecting here? And how are we going to interpret the results? And how might we go wrong in this path if we choose to pursue it, right? Because to some extent, you know, I with what Jordan laid out at the start, it's understandable how patients get here. Mm-hmm. And there's, while ideally a skilled, trained physician has the skills necessary to appropriately manage, order, interpret these tests, healthcare professionals are also imperfect. And so you're going to also hear patient stories about, my doctor didn't test me, and then I found that I got this test and it turns out there was something wrong. So that feeds into this kind of, you know, problematic, potentially conspiratorial, like orientation towards the medical establishment, as it were, right? And so I also don't feel great about, you know, strictly gatekeeping like access to your own health data or labs or something like that. And this is probably something I would say that I've to some extent like softened my stance on over the years, is that, you know, there's no putting this like back in the bottle, like this access to labs. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go away. And so I've kind of shifted a little bit away from just like railing against it, you know, broadly speaking in all circumstances, to like almost more of like a harm reduction standpoint of like, how can we best orient this so that patients get more value and less harm out of it? Mm-hmm. And that's part of why when I got messaged by, you know, one of these companies with like a, hey, free influencer thing, come get all your labs checked. And I was like, well, at least I have the knowledge and the training to know how to interpret all these false positives that I'm about to get, which sure enough did happen. You know, I can get a sense of what are patients going to see and what might be a better way to orient this. And there are certainly some tests where I'm like, straight up, this is screwed up. You should not be ordering this. Like they ordered an ANA on me as one example.
No.
I was positive 1 to 80 ANA, completely meaningless, no symptoms, whatever the case is. But I did some Googling and sure enough, I found patients who were like, I went through this testing and I have an ANA. And then all these commenters are like, you have autoimmunity. You need to do this, that, the other thing, whatever.
Terrible.
And various other, you know, abnormal findings like my leptin level is low.
Oh my God. Yeah, your leptin level?
Because I'm lean. Like, I said, oh, my hormones are off. Send me to an endocrinologist because my leptin level, so those are a few examples of things where I'm like, this is straight up dumb to have checked this. But there are others where I'm like, you know, I think that with appropriate, you know, informed conversation around it, those types of harms can be potentially mitigated, even around something like testosterone, for example. The last thing I'll say is it reminds me of, you know, I talk a lot about like pain issues. And I remember seeing going through training how in the VA system where I was training, radiology reports started to get amended. So when like a spinal x-ray got reported with like, you know, moderate multi-level DJD, there would be like a little addendum that says like, just FYI, like a huge swath of the normal population has this particular finding. It should be, you know, this is not on its own diagnostic in isolate, whatever the case is, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm imagining a scenario where at least some of these labs, maybe if somebody seeks out some of these levels, has some caveats around it in terms of interpretation. And at least as important, I think, is putting some error bars around the labs of like, what is the established accuracy of this assay? Because people love the little pinpoint numbers that they get and like trending them of like, oh, my testosterone went from 580 to 600. And we're like, that's completely nothing. But if you just said your testosterone falls, we're like, give it a 95% confidence interval. This lab result shows that we're 95% confident your testosterone level falls between somewhere between 550 and 650. And people will like operate based on that assumption. It's like maybe some less harm might come of something like that. Just some ways to like make it less problematic for people.
That's
I get at this.
I think if there were little like sentences with each one, caveats to explain, well, like, you know, using testosterone is a great one because everyone wants to get that done.
Yeah.
How it has to be done in the appropriate manner, why it has to be done, you know, maybe there could be little bullet points with all of these that say, that explain, so people aren't going, oh my God, my testosterone was 600 4 years ago when I shouldn't have had it tested in the first place, and now it's 350. What does that mean? Oh no.
Yeah.
And it's nothing.
I agree you're not going to be able to take it and put it back into the bottle. So I think at this point, we should find ways to just make it extremely cheap, but be very transparent, very direct, instead of all this marketing to try to think you're going to unlock some secrets. Because as you all talked about in the last podcast, pretest probabilities and downstream testing and increased fears and anxieties and costs from that testing, especially with the ANA, you can go down crazy rabbit holes with just that mildly positive ANA with no symptoms. So I honestly think I'm all for appropriate. So here'd be a good example. LP little a testing. Everybody should have it at least
get that
once. Yeah. We haven't done a whole podcast on LP little a, but essentially it's an LDL like particle that's extra atherogenic, and it's genetic. So you won't see it in your regular lipid panel, but everybody should get it at least once. There are some cardiologists that haven't even started ordering
it at all.
For whatever reason, it's like, how's that optimal?
But to be fair, you know, that's a relatively newer science and statistical consideration. And so that's where professional guidelines come into play. People think, oh, you know, guidelines, it's just mainstream medicine keeping everyone in the box. But there's a reason we have experts, clinical experts, research experts, statistical epidemiologic experts giving recommendations on what things should be screened for in everyone, whom should be screened for what. And then then we get into case finding when there are disease states. I think Jordan has been trying to say something.
Well, no, I was just going to, real quick though, but for the LP little A testing, this would be perfect for direct totally. Testing because it's like, oh, my doctor didn't order it. They didn't know what it was. I can go get it for $20.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this might be an interesting talking point. And this is something we've actually been exploring because we all agree, yeah, you can't put this back in the box, right? People are going to want some testing, and direct to consumer does seem like an easier avenue for a lot of folks, particularly if they're, you know, have the means to do so. And but we would all agree that you want to do it responsibly and appropriately, right? And so it would be nice, like, okay, let's say you're a lab testing company, or that's a part of your business, that you end up, you know, on this page of labs, and boom, like a questionnaire thing pops up, and you get to fill out some demographic data, some like symptom data, whatever, and it would guide you based on your demographic data, based on any symptoms that you're experiencing, towards, okay, maybe this is like a basic level of labs that we think are reasonable based on what you're saying per current guidelines. There's an expanded set if you are like a, I want to do everything. You're a maximizer, as Dr. Baraki has talked about. You want to do everything. And so you could maybe refine the choices rather than just the shotgun approach, test everything, which would be inappropriate, ANA, leptin levels, whatever, testosterone level if you don't actually need it. And then when you report these findings, yeah, there would be some, you know, extended text about, look, here's the normal range, here's the confidence that we have that you're here, and this is what it probably means. Follow up with your physician. But as it's currently done, particularly by these companies, Function, Merrick, et cetera, we're going to test everything. The follow-up is non-existent, right? But and the reports are minimalistic. It's like, look, here's the range. This is, quote, optimal. This is normal, whatever. And so people then are like, well, what do I do with all of this? And yeah, you get some unintended harms. And so I think there's a way to do this responsibly, or at least certainly better, right? Maybe as Austin was talking about, in a like a harm reduction type view. But as it currently is, you have these large amount of money behind these marketing efforts to, you know, promote this stuff. Like, you should be doing this because it's benefiting your health trajectory, which I suspect on average it's actually harmful to folks, not only like the financial costs and the anxiety around any abnormal analyte that maybe otherwise, you know, forces them to access more healthcare, spend more money and everything else, undergo unnecessary procedures, unnecessary medications. And to the point from our previous podcast that we did with you guys a year or two ago, that particular patient, his actual issue, at least a major issue that could be ascertained by the labs, was he had anemia, iron deficient, and no one was working that up further. It was kind of overlooked. It's like, oh, no, you should be taking all of these other medications. Oh, and maybe like an oral iron supplement. It's like, whoa, we didn't establish why you have this anemia.
Yeah.
And there's so many different causes, but oh, by the way, we're going to have you recommend that you take this, this, and this. Oh, by the way, none of these are FDA approved, by the way. So these are just like research chemicals at that point. And it's like, so all of that from top to bottom is wrong. And it is unfortunate that so many people in particularly the fitness space with little to no medical training, and most of these folks are young, so little to no personal experience with the medical system, are like, you should take these to their audience. You should have these.
And huge, I understand they're being huge paid. Fitness influencers getting paid to promote these that a lot of people follow and trust who are otherwise pretty scientifically sound, which is really sad because, boy, talk about, and it's almost like a, I don't know, wolf in sheep's clothing without even trying to be.
But they don't.
Something like that.
I don't think they understand.
No, they don't. But they're not doctors. They're not medical people.
They're not supposed to.
They're fitness coaches who have huge followings, and then they're getting people to go to Merrick or Function or whatever. And by the way, what are the, because I know what they say are the follow-ups. Like, you know, don't they say that, you know, Merrick Health has some sort of ongoing care with tailored treatment plans? And
have you two had anybody go to Merrick? Because I've had a few patients go to Merrick, and I don't know how much I can say without HIPAA and whatever.
Well, don't use their names. Good.
I'm not going to use their names.
Should we get a social security number?
Every other thing, I'll be careful about what I would say. Put a picture, screen share.
But really, what do they actually do? Because if there are actual problems, like if there are endocrine hormone problems, then they need to get referred to endocrinologists like me and then have real workups.
Now, I want
to
hear what Dr. Austin's Function experience was like. But do you want to do that? And then I'll go on what my Merrick experience was.
Yeah, like a couple weeks after the labs all finalized, I ended up getting essentially like a text overview summary from a physician, supposedly, whether it was a physician kind of glancing over an AI summary from our could have been. It almost reads that way to some extent, but mostly text based. When I look at the individual lab result, so for example, I under the positive ANA, it said your test results indicate an increased level of autoimmune activity. It shows that your immune system is reacting to parts of your own cells, a titer of 1 to 80, while many labs consider a result below 1 to 40 as negative, suggests a higher concentration of these antibodies. It does say a positive ANA test alone does not confirm an autoimmune disease, so discuss with your healthcare provider. So there's like something there, but it's buried well after it says your test indicates autoimmune activity. Well, I'm like, no, it actually does not. Like, tons of things can trigger a transient elevation in NAs. So there was a big picture overview, and then there was an action plan, and that action plan consisted of top five foods that I should eat.
Of course.
Including herring, mackerel, salmon, tomatoes, and strawberries. And then top five foods that I should avoid. Yeah, yeah. I needed these tests to tell me that those are good for me. And then top five foods to avoid, that all five of them were different forms of plant-based oils, unsurprisingly.
Oh, my God.
And then there was a bunch of supplements that were kind of personalized based on my biomarkers, like brain, red yeast, rice, whatever, which didn't even make a ton of sense.
So
like,
trying to give me statin.
Yeah, and then, even though my ApoB is like whatever 90 or something like that, it's like,
were they
okay.
selling it themselves? Was it
no? I didn't get marketed directly to purchase supplements from them, so there's that, I suppose. Yeah,
they got that going for them.
Yeah. So hey, did it have you do the labs as appropriately done? Like, you know, like a lot of the hormone labs have to be first thing in the morning when you wake up fasting, and then what all labs did they test? If you even have time to go through them all.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. There was, it was appropriately done. It actually took, they spaced it out between two visits just because of the sheer amount. Like that was a lot of blood that was drawn, as well as a urine sample. So the whole ANA panel, CBC, of course, CMP, lead, mercury levels, extended like advanced lipid panel, including not only ApoB and LPA, but also like the particle size measures and quantifications. Okay. Let's see, there's liver function tests, PSA for me as a 36-year-old. Of course, I have a pathologically low whatever, you know, my free PSA or something, which is meaningless. A pretty extended hormone panel that'll definitely trigger Carl. So DHEA, sulfate, estradiol, LH, FSH, prolactin, free and total test, which was 800 for the record.
Good job.
Leptin levels, insulin, uric acid. A1C, omega-3 panel, /6 panel, homocysteine, full iron panel, MMA, B12, vitamin D, zinc, amylase, lipase, which I've never ingested in anyone who's asymptomatic, cortisol, of course, a full autoimmune thyroid panel, TPO, thyroglobulin antibodies, total T3, of course, and then a full UA. I think that covers most of the things that had done.
Yeah. So,
extremely answered.
You're right. So, all right. And so now I'm triggered. So riddle me this, Batman. What time did you get it done?
Both of these were morning.
But like 7, 8 a.m.?
Yeah, around then.
Right when you woke up. What was your cortisol, out of curiosity?
18.8 micrograms per deciliter.
Are you being serious, or are you just making that up?
I'm getting to it. Oh, yeah. It actually was 18.8. I guess I sent him to Jordan.
So that's really good. So let me just give you an example of what could happen. Why in the world would that be checked? So that is a very important hormone to check with clinical interpretation. So you guys talked a lot about pretest probability back at our original podcast, and looking into either cortisol excess, some sort of endogenous Cushing syndrome from a pituitary tumor or adrenal tumor requires a significant pretest probability, and it requires very nuanced ways to screen for that. And it's not just a morning cortisol, by the way. That is helpful if we have someone we're concerned who has adrenal insufficiency.
That's what I show all the time in hospitalized hypertensive shocky patients.
Yeah, thanks. And so let's just say, so that was a very normal, very robust, appropriate morning cortisol. If there was a concern that you had adrenal insufficiency from a variety of symptoms, let's say you were losing weight, extraordinarily fatigued, maybe tan, like you guys were talking about me, but like in the winter, I always say, did you get tan in the winter by any chance?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And but let's say you are asymptomatic. You have zero clinical suspicion of adrenal insufficiency. And what if that would have been 9? Mm-hmm. What would you guys all do? You three, non-endocrinologists, but you guys know what the heck you're talking about. What if his cortisol would have come back at 9?
Repeated it probably.
Right. So now we don't know what, you know, I mean, it's almost certainly not abnormal. It just happens to be a fluctuated at, you know, lower than what we would expect for normal. In your case, doesn't rule out adrenal insufficiency. Now we're going down a rabbit hole of a whole evaluation into your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis for no reason.
Yeah. One question maybe to you guys, particularly because I think you've been interfacing a lot more with these folks on social media and in your practices, particularly you, Carl. Do you think there's maybe a bigger swath of people who have not been tested, have any sort of testing done, who need to get testing, right? Maybe this type of thing would be actually net beneficial, or versus people who have been adequately tested and now are being over-tested. You see what I'm saying? Like on average, do you think we could benefit from more testing or less testing?
For cortisol specifically? Or
No. Just like generally speaking, like it, and let's put aside the issue of like access to healthcare.
Is the key problem. So I'll use some of these things in my world for an example. Absolutely. In general, people are over testing these. But let's say, you know, because there's a lot of the social media influencers out there. What are they talking about with cortisol? Nowadays, it's cortisol face. Well, there's a term for that. That's called Cushingoid syndrome or Cushingoid facies. And the most common cause of Cushing syndrome, excess cortisol like glucocorticoids causing disease state, is actually medication. So most people, you know, get prednisone because they accidentally found a positive ANA and now they're getting treated by their rheumatologist with huge doses of prednisone, causing themselves to have Cushing syndrome. Now they have steroid-induced diabetes and osteoporosis and blood clots. So that's, you know, oral steroids are the most common cause of Cushing syndrome. Rarely there are pituitary tumors and adrenal tumors. I will tell you that there's probably a much higher incidence of very mild, what we call autonomous cortisol secretion from small adrenal nodules than what has historically been found, because it doesn't always cause like these clinical signs. So there's going to be something coming down the road where, you know how you guys are maybe familiar with resistant hypertension, right? Mm-hmm. And so we don't screen enough for people who have high blood pressure. There's going to be a push soon for Spencer's favorite, get everyone getting screened for primary aldosteronism
constantly.
And people with hypertension. And we should. Now, this goes back to research.
Why the hell would Infunction be doing that?
They checked an ANA, you know, but not a renin.
These places were going to do anything, they should be checking an aldosterone and a renin level to screen, because so many people have high blood pressure. We're going to actually do a ton of good if we started doing that.
Yeah, did they check
more urine than these other things?
Did they check your urine albumin creatinine level?
There was a urine protein check.
So there's going to be, you know, there's recently a Catalyst trial looking into mild excess cortisol and resistant hyperglycemia in people with type 2 diabetes. Now, there's a lot of stuff that has to get panned out from that. There's going to be a lot of debate, but we maybe should be doing more DEX suppression tests in people who might have, you know, very mild adrenal sources of excess cortisol causing resistant hyperglycemia, osteoporosis, et cetera, because, you know, certainly we can treat those, and we probably don't screen that enough. The problem is, again, this gets into pretest probabilities, statistics, and clinical interpretation. So then they're going to get sent to endocrinologists. There aren't enough of us because we spend too much time with people and don't get paid. And then it takes a lot. It's a deep rabbit hole that takes a lot of nuanced consideration to diagnose Cushing syndrome. You got to make sure whether it's pituitary or adrenal, you got to make sure it's real, because now they're going down surgical routes. The medications to actually treat these, if you have to use medicine, are very, you have to have a lot of caution, a lot of monitoring. They're not just random things that, you know, people go, oh, I'm just going to treat my excess cortisol because someone said I have, you know, cortisol face. No, that's not, you don't do that. That's very dangerous.
I think to the point that Jordan was making, if we wanted to just like drastically oversimplify the entire testing apparatus and say, do you think that more people are under tested or over tested? Of course, we're just like collapsing everything down into one line and viewing it almost as a matter of like sensitivity and specificity. Like there's always going to be a trade off. If we test more, we're going to catch more. more false positives. If we test less, we're going to catch less. What we catch is going to be real, but we're going to miss a bunch of people. If we just choose where is that line going to slide, you know, I just pulled up, I did a quick search, for example, of like what proportion of adults have like appropriately had their lipids screened. And it's somewhere in the range of like 70 to 80% in recent years. So you can make the argument that when it comes to lipids, for example, the US population is slightly under-tested. As far as like A1C checks for patients with diabetes being monitored appropriately on the intervals that's supposed to be monitored, definitely like under-checked, broadly speaking. A part of that is, again, access to care and people coming in for follow-up and getting things done. And so it kind of might support Jordan's position that there is maybe a way to do this responsibly with the appropriately selected panel of things that broadly deployed on a population level with like appropriate caveats around the results might actually be net beneficial and less harmful compared with shotgunning a bunch of some of them are objectively uninterpretable tests with no actionable results. Like, what am I going to do with my leptin level, right? But if we said, you know, a lipid panel, an LPA, a Naldo screen, you know, and some glycemic testing or something like that, like, think that the net effect on that would be unlikely to be harmful. And then the last caveat is something that Jordan alluded to earlier. Like, I think we have part of this conflict comes from what I've heard described, and I've kind of adopted this characterization of patients as either minimizers or maximizers, people who just want to do like the bare minimum. You know, I don't like seeing doctors. I don't like doing things. Just what's the absolute minimum that I need to do? Okay, that's like one population. And how can we best serve those folks? Like, yeah, waist measurement and a blood pressure and maybe like get an LDL checked at some point in your life, maybe like if that's all I could get out of you. And then there's the maximizers, definitely those who are more selected for in the fitness community who like want the data, for example. And how can we do that with the least harm? Whereas with the minimizer, we're like, how can we get the most benefit, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I think it can be done. I have a business proposal for you at the end of this podcast.
Well, I guess we could have our own where then we actually have real experts putting in the selected things that, you know,
I have a whole business plan. I have the whole legal entity ready to go. So I'll propose that at the end of this, maybe on or off the air. However, I do want to go
in the same. I assume we have the same business proposal, which is fine. Good. Just, all right, let's collaborate. Yeah.
All right. So I have, I want to go over this patient. I'm not going to say whether they're a man or a woman, but they're between the ages of 30 and 60. Okay. So here's the deal. They got the same kind of big, huge battery of tests. And what my understanding is what this Merrick does, they actually hand you off to a health coach to go over the labs. It's
so
not
a coach who has credentials in what?
Nothing that I know of. And this person had, you know, all the various different labs all over the place, lots of different hormone tests that were inappropriately done. You know, some of these patients come in like, I think my cortisol is high. And as you said, no, that's, you know, it's appropriate. You don't want it to be lower because then you'll have adrenal insufficiency. If you want to look for high cortisol, we got to do X, Y, Z. But the coach was upselling this person to supplements like vitamin D when their vitamin D level was, I think in the 30s.
So perfect.
It was great. It was fine. But I asked them like, wait, there's blood in your urine. What did they say? they said, that's fine. It's normal. Everything about the urine is normal. I go, no, that's not normal.
The windshield washer fluid is not fine.
No, they just kept trying to push me to take these different supplements. There was a few different supplements. I remember the vitamin D specifically because I'm like, their vitamin D was stark fine. And I was like, are you sure they didn't say anything? They sent me the report and all this stuff. I was like, oh my God. And I didn't want to alarm this person because I'm like, hey, it's possible. It's
you got RCC. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be like a bladder can. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So then I repeated and it was positive again. Almost went to the urologist, but it ended up being normal the past two times. They see me for weight management and cardiometabolic purposes, but I couldn't let that go when I saw it. Whatever. So the primary care has ordered it a couple times. It's been normal, but I was like, but being positive a couple times, I'm like, I really think you need to see a urologist. And they did not say anything about it. In fact, just focused on other things to upsell supplements. And then apparently they try to upsell you to then having a consult with a doctor. I'm told maybe it would have been another $300 or something like that, but I don't know how this is even legal. I think that model is very dangerous, clearly.
Yeah. Well, you're practicing healthcare. See, this is different. This is different. What's happening with these shotgun lab approaches is not healthcare. This is business. And it's big business, right? A lot of the labs that are being used, just even that run the tests, aren't accredited, aren't doing the right tests anyway. And so you're, you know, the numbers that you get from one of these tests, I wouldn't really know what to make of them, because again, this is business. They're trying to figure out, all right, what's the lab that has the lowest overhead cost, gives it an acceptable result as far as what we're communicating to our customers. They're not patients, right? And then the follow-up is not set up to, okay, if we catch something that is abnormal, like blood in the urine, for example, then what, right? Yeah. Like we made the joke when we were reviewing Austin's labs, like, man, they test all this stuff. They didn't test like a troponin, you know? And he's like, well.
Tell people why that's funny.
Well, the point is, like, you know, if you catch one of these cardiac enzymes that is, you know, we associate with a heart attack or a damage to the heart muscle, then you would immediately, you know, trigger a whole cascade of healthcare where it's like, okay, we need to evaluate you to make sure that you did or didn't have one of these things and further work you up to see like where you're at. But you can't do that in this business model, right? So this business model is set up to just give you a bunch of data. And then potentially, in the case of Merrick, you know, upsell you to supplements, not actually render healthcare. So as healthcare professionals, like we could all get off air or whatever, powwow would be like, okay, look, if we wanted to run labs or give people the option to select their own labs, here's how we would do it in an ethical way and in a way that would actually improve likely the person's health trajectory rather than just give them data. Because there's a difference between collecting data and actually doing something useful with it. Yeah, I mean, if we could agree that maybe lipids are under-tested, A1Cs maybe under-tested, you know, these other sort of specialized labs, LPA, things like that, we could come up with a battery of tests that would be appropriate for a lot of folks should they want to undergo that testing, and then what to do about them. But we would leave out other things where we're like, well, look, this really needs to be done under clinical suspicion with clinical sort of interpretation and further workup. Should this be positive or would it change management? And there would be no, like, you know, supplement recommendation at the end of this. And we certainly wouldn't hand you off to a health coach unless that health coach had actual medical training. Like maybe it's a health coach who is like a, you know, an NP or a PA or something like that, or other, you know, specialist.
Even an RN, I think.
Yeah, literally anything. Anybody. Some sort of.
Yeah. Someone who works more in an inpatient acute care setting, you know, I'm used to the scenario where I get called or my residents get called for critical lab results. I kind of wonder what happens with these companies if there does happen to be something like that. Like, what if somebody gets a check and their potassium's like, you know, 6.2 or something, even if it's hemolyzed or whatever, but maybe to some extent.
I believe Quest called.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So I think it's, so yeah, Quest has their own thing. Because it's a critical lab.
Yeah.
They have to call it.
But to some extent, you can make the argument that, like, you know, in your case, even though it's not acutely critical, like unexplained hematuria is arguably quote unquote a critical finding in somebody like that. Or if their Billy ends up coming, it's like, you could have something pretty ominous going on there, you know?
So here's a question, I guess, then from my world and in the world of hormones, what if you would have had, you know, maybe some symptoms, but it's not that big of a deal. And let's say your cortisol was 5 and suddenly it's like, whoa, that could really be something, but it's not going to trigger any critical flag in those things. Now suddenly you end up dying of adrenal insufficiency because you didn't go to an appropriate evaluation for symptoms. Even testosterone, you know, this is what really happens more often. People go, they do this stuff. They really do have symptoms, right? They have a low libido. They're, you know, they're 40 years old, low libido. They have legitimate symptoms, but they don't go to a real healthcare doctor. Or maybe you're right. Maybe they only get 7 minutes. They get blown off because maybe they're jacked and the guy's like, yeah, right. You don't have low testosterone, but the person's always been jacked and now he has a low libido. And then he goes to this thing and he gets checked and it's 150. And then somehow with these other like men's health places, what then they do is they try to sell them testosterone even when they have normal testosterone levels because they're just dishing out steroids. But in that case, they give a person testosterone because he actually has low testosterone. But as it turns out, he has a huge mass in his pituitary. It might be a prolactinoma that could have been easily treated with medicine. Or maybe he's cooking Cushing's disease, and that's a very dangerous thing, or acromegaly, or just a big fat pituitary mass, and now he's got the rest of the deficiencies, including adrenal insufficiency, and goes off and doesn't get treated, but takes his testosterone, but then dies of adrenal insufficiency.
Yeah. It's huge.
That's the thing is, like, all of us can hypothesize like a million different ways that this can go wrong. And I think that maybe who knows what problems have come up at these companies. But so far, I think they probably continued to progress, grow, succeed off of the fact that they're selecting for like generally pretty healthy and wealthy mm-hmm. populations, right? And so they're like kind of getting more lucky by like not actually testing very sick people. Yeah. They don't have to actually deal with many of these consequences. I'm sure some of them do slip through one way or the other. But yeah, I mean, when we see the real pathology day in and day out, it's like, gosh, like there's so many ways that this could go wrong. And that's why, like, if we're talking about how could this be set up, it would have to be very carefully with systems in place to avoid misinterpretation, overinterpretation, you know, premature, inappropriate action or inaction, et cetera.
Yeah, but all that does is lower the bottom line.
Right.
Like if you're guiding people away from spending money on labs, right? And guiding people away from spending money on unnecessary supplements, unnecessary testing or whatever, well, that's not very profitable to the business. And again, these people, these businesses, these entities are not interested in delivering healthcare. They're interested in what's the next, you know, round of investors, what's the next, you know, how can we sell this in 5 years and maximize our profits? And look, no shade to that. The business of business is business. I understand that. I just don't like it when it's done unethically.
Right.
And unfortunately, the public at this particular time does not see that. They're of the opinion, well, look, you guys being the medical system, the medical cabal, we're just gatekeeping. We're like, look, we're not going to test you for this. And, well, we don't have time for this. And we're just going to, you know, minimize you and shrug you away. And so it kind of makes sense. Like this popped up and now is growing and growing. And yeah, so maybe it's just our fault. It's our fault.
Well, it's the system's fault, you know, and because we all rage. I don't know any single doctor who doesn't rage against the dysfunction of our healthcare system, not allowing us to spend more time, more quality time. And then ironically, the patients don't want to spend money at the doctors, but then they go spend all their money on these things. It's kind of an ironic thing. But yeah. But yeah, it's unfortunate. And yeah, the one person I'm thinking of literally said in their advertisement for Merrick, oh, the doctors are gatekeepers. I want to know all my labs, so I just went to them. Yeah, he may not know what to do with them, but that's what he yeah.
Martin. They might harm you, apparently. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys, Carl or Spencer, if you guys are familiar with this tool from the BMJ called Your Results May Vary. It's something that Jordan and I have referenced a lot on our podcast ever since I first learned about it. You should Google it, BMJ, Your Results May Vary. Basically, this tool that was put together, it looked at the biological variation inherent to the tests and the analytical variation inherent to the tests, and basically took those statistical variations and generates an error bar around a given test measurement. So you pick your test and it lets you put in two different values, and it lets you basically see, are these two values sufficiently different based on the biological variation to be actually different, or are they more likely to be the same? And so this is super useful when I'm like talking about this with patients with whom I have the time and they have the like education to be able to grasp that they have like the numeracy to be able to go through this stuff. I occasionally do it. More often, I end up just broadly explaining the concepts around this. And that's kind of one of the points I made earlier is like so many of these tests, like I don't like the idea of gatekeeping them, but if you get them, the next step is like skilled, nuanced interpretation and having concrete, absolute values oversells the accuracy and the precision that these tests can often offer us. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some tests that are like fantastically accurate and precise. So like a modern fourth generation high sensitivity troponin assay that I get in the hospital. It's like, yeah, that's going to give me to like a 10th decimal point what this patient's blood troponin level is. And I trust that. But there are so many others where, you know, a blood triglyceride level or something like that, if you look at two values on that, it's pretty messy. And so this is something that's been useful when explaining these concepts, enlightening, seems like it'd probably be useful for you guys too. And worth, I think, baking into some sort of tool like this to show you, for example, maybe your test result comes paired with that type of a graph of like, here's where you were last time with error bar. Here's where you are this time with error bar, or maybe just like, don't put the point estimate and just put the error bar, like you're somewhere in here. And that's about as accurate as we
don't give away all my business ideas. Jesus.
This is amazing. I cannot believe I didn't know about this, because in the endocrine world, there is so much imperfection, but people think that these hormone tests are like perfect things, and they don't understand how complex and imperfect these lab assays are that we have, and the inter-individual variability and all this stuff and what it means. I cannot believe I didn't know this. BMJ, the British Medical Journal.
Right? Yeah, your results may vary.
I found it. This is really cool. Thank you.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I wish there was more labs on there. One thing related to this topic that really it pisses me off, maybe even more. I don't know. I do think these things are a little are quite predatory, rather, just to general public. But in the space that I operate in most of the time is fitness space. And there are fitness coaches, again, with little to no medical training, that is part of their requirement to work with them. They require patients to go obtain a number of testing, mostly related to hormones or vitamin statuses and micronutrients and whatever. And then they are, from there, not only interpreting them, but also then extrapolating them to say, well, you need to do this, this, and this with your training, your nutrition, and whatever. And it's like, I mean, I've been in the space for a long time. I am very, very concerned with not only health, but certainly performance. And I don't know of a lab that I would be like, you have to have this for me to create a exercise program for you to, you know, improve your performance, for example, or your health. Like, there's nothing that would either disqualify somebody from exercise, you know, in a sort of otherwise healthy individual or person who's otherwise, you know, able to walk and talk and go to the bathroom on their own. You know, I'm like, whoa, this is a fatal lab. If you get this, you do not pass go, do not collect $200. We have to immediately get you.
I need your creatinine before you can squat or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, this is more like, I need your vitamin D status. I need your testosterone level.
Popular online, they're not even fitness. They're like, these are like popular podcast types of people where they're creating like certifications on lab testing, and they even do podcasts, maybe on the Huberman or I don't know. I've seen some of these people, and I'm always like, wait a second, what lab tests are you promoting to then watch performance and whatever? It's just, I think they're
smoking mirrors, money. They're making stuff up.
We see a lot of this in the women's health space, both younger and perimenopausal, postmenopausal. This is the stuff that, in the same way that Carl was getting pretty triggered earlier, my wife is a gynecologist, so she gets to see and hear all of the women's hormone testing around the menopausal transition, and sometimes inappropriately way before that, or sometimes inappropriately way after that. And just like, she's like, that lab is nothing. Like, it shouldn't even exist as a thing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, again, any time that we would push back against these things, again, the medical establishment would say, you probably don't need that. It's probably inappropriate. It's just viewed as like minimizing or shrugging off somebody's concern. Mm-hmm. That is not what we're saying. Look, if you have a health concern, if you have an experience that you are worried about, absolutely, in a perfect world, you would see your healthcare professional and they would have time to listen to you. And they would evaluate that appropriately, work that up as it needs to be. But yeah, the system is kind of messed up. I'm sympathetic to that.
Yeah, it is. It sucks.
But to your point earlier, Carl, like, I don't know any physician that's like, medical system rocks today. I love it.
No.
This is all. Yeah. So it's not to say that, like, there's no place, again, for direct-to-consumer lab testing or telemedicine or, you know, stuff done via questionnaire or the internet. I'm not saying that, but it cannot be this shotgun approach where extra resources, in this case, mostly money and you know, all these labs, they're using all this stuff for inappropriate lab testing. At some point, you know, the economy of scale, this is going to be problematic, right? So I wish, you know, maybe we just end the podcast now. We figure out this business idea. We launch it tomorrow.
We're going to do it. I have 10 minutes before patient. So, all right, everybody, if you have heard of these places, Function, Merix, Superpower, all these different places, just buyer beware. There are tests that you're going to get in these better if tests that are probably inappropriately done, and some of them will be positive or maybe even negative. And you should probably have an actual good physician help you out before going to one of these options.
And everyone needs to join together and fight against our dysfunctional healthcare system, because doctors want to spend time with everybody and do quality care. I promise. We don't want to spend 15 minutes. So I'm going to go broke spending more time with people.
All right. Yep. Go follow the Barbell Medicine crew. Both Dr. Jordan and Dr. Austin will put in the show notes. They have really good online info. They have YouTube. They have their own podcast, all that stuff. Here's our outro. Send this to a friend or family that could benefit.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities.